Travel presented by Vintage Guitar Magazine with your host, me, James Patrick Regan, otherwise known as Jimmy from the Deadlies. And today I'm speaking with guitarist Christo Rupenthal from the Hawaiian Steel Guitar Association. In our conversation, Christo tells us about his national guitar collection and his involvement with the Hawaiian Steel Guitar Association and his love of vintage music. Christo talks about the events the HSGA holds, including this year's event, which will be in Santa Cruz, California, on October 22nd through the 25th, and he describes the membership, which is worldwide. Christo takes us through what is available on their website, lessons, tutorials, and eventually instruments for sale, and Christo talks about his work performing Hawaiian songs from the 20s and 30s, and he gives us a history lesson of the early players and their instruments, and he also takes us through his career as a luthier. Christo gives us his thoughts on the resurgence of the popularity of Hawaiian steel guitar, which had help from SpongeBob SquarePants. Christo takes us through the common tunings for Hawaiian steel guitar and his preferred tuning of an A11. Finally, Christo tells us about his new album, Get Under the Moon. To find out more about Christo, you can go to his website, musicbychristo.com, which is spelled MUSICBYCHRISTO. And for information on the Hawaiian Steel Guitar Association, you can go to their website, which is hsga.org. Please subscribe, like, comment, share, and most of all, review this podcast. I'd really appreciate it. And please support Vintage Guitar Magazine and all the wonderful things they do for us guitar players, because they do so many wonderful things for us guitar players. Oh, and hey, if you want to support the program, you can go to patreon.com/haveguitarwilltravelpodcast. I'd appreciate that too. Here's my friend Christo. Hey there, Christo. Where are you based?
I'm in Wisconsin, in Madison area. Okay,
very close to Hawaii.
Right, exactly.
Very cool. Those are all Nationals behind you?
Yeah, they're all Style 3. That's like one of my main vintage guitar things. And then there's a Rickenbacker frying pan lap steel over there on the other side, but yeah.
Okay, right on. Those are great. Yeah. How long ago did you get involved with the Steel Guitar Association?
I think the first year I went was like 2015, 2016, something like that. I was brought along with a friend. So this has been about 10 years or so.
Okay. All right. How long have you been playing steel guitar, so to speak?
Well, definitely longer than that. Maybe like, I guess, boy, it must be like 17 years or something like that. Like jazz guitar was my first, I was already a professional gigging musician on guitar before I started playing steel. So.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
How often does the Steel Guitar Association have events?
So we typically do one a year in person.
Okay.
So last year we were in Waikiki, and the previous 3 years before that we were at various places in California. So in the Bay Area, in Emeryville, and then we did one in San Jose and one in Cupertino. So kind of like around the Bay Area. This year we're doing one in Santa Cruz.
Okay.
So kind of hopping around and... trying to find a home base where we can just kind of hit the repeat button on the event. But, And then, so there were a couple of years off from the pandemic. And then prior to that, the group was meeting in Fort Collins, Colorado for like 10 years or eight years or something.
Yeah. Are most of the members based in, the California area?
Actually, I mean, it's totally worldwide. About 20 or 25% of our membership they're Japanese. Okay. And a lot of people on the West Coast, of course, but yeah, there's people, South America, Brazil, all over the place. Yeah, Europe and stuff. So yeah, it's worldwide for sure.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so, and the membership, how large is it?
Right now it's sitting at around 200, but it's like we're kind of in a year of transition right now, because historically the club's always been like a quarterly newsletter kind of publication thing along with other stuff, and we're really moving a lot of stuff online, and it's kind of just jumbled our membership a lot. I think the peak was about 600 or 700. So it's just right now we're like trying to get as many people transitioned over to the website for online, because the print side of things was just getting to be kind of an unnecessary expense.
Sure.
It was like the less people that are interested in it, the more it costs. Yeah. To do each issue kind of stuff. So yeah. It's a little bit of a transition year right now, but so we're sitting like around 150, almost 200, somewhere in there. So.
Uh-huh. And the website, is there like lessons and stuff available on the website?
Yeah, so we're really building out the website. We went through a whole rebranding of the club two and a half years ago or something. Mm-hmm. And now we're like building all this content on the website. So we've digitized all of our previous newsletters, and each one of those has at least one music tab in it. So that's okay. Like you become a member, you have like instant access to a huge library of sheet music, and building up the video tutorials and things like that, trying to repurpose old content and also add more value in that way. That's kind of like we want to like become kind of like the world's landing page for Hawaiian steel guitar music. So we're really trying to beef up the resources.
But yeah,
it's a big part of the project currently. So
yeah. And is it yeah. basically, I mean, the Nationals, is it square neck resonators, or is it across like steel guitars as well?
Well, it's primarily lap steel, but like the important thing is Hawaiian music. So, mm-hmm. Most of our players, I would say probably 90% of our players are electric lap steel players.
Okay.
And then obviously some people play pedal steel, and some people do like the resonator world, the early hot Hawaiian stuff from the vaudeville era. That's like my world. That's my wheelhouse personally. So sometimes I'm the only one playing a resonator, but not always, when we gather. But so a lot of as far as lap steel goes, a lot of like C6 players. Sure. That's like kind of the starting point for a lot of people who play that Hawaiian music. So
yep, get it. And as the crown jewel, the Rickenbacker frying pan.
I mean, that's like still to this day, that's what all the guys in Hawaii are using.
Uh huh.
It's like really the kind of the ultimate. Yeah. So
right on. Very, very good. Just for history's sake, who are the originators of the Hawaiian steel guitar?
Yeah, of the guitar?
Well, of the, just Hawaiian steel in general.
Oh, yeah. So so this is like a big part of my whole deal. It's like, so I do these antique Aloha Hawaiian Music of the Golden Age presentations. Like, this is a big collection of 78s here, and I'll do, bring a phonograph and talk about all this early stuff. And so it's really credited to Joseph Keikuku, was the earliest, basically that's the origin story of the steel guitar overall.
Uh-huh.
So this, the story goes that he was walking down a sugar cane plantation in the late 1800s. And, by that point, the guitar had arrived in Hawaii, but the steel guitar did not exist yet. And so he kind of, there's stories that like he picked up a railroad spike from the train track and slid it across the strings and, created the steel guitar. And, the story goes that he spent a number of years kind of like in the woodshed perfecting the style before he was really playing it for anybody else. And so he kind of came onto the scene in the late 1800s as kind of a fully proficient player, and it just became a huge part of the culture there and everything. And uh-huh. he was also involved in the very first recording session that ever had a steel guitar on it. He wasn't the steel guitar, but this is for Edison. He actually recorded the second day of those sessions on the steel guitar. So wow. A very important figure in our world. Uh-huh. So,
and yeah. When was the peak, do you think, of was it?
Well, I mean, I think there's a few bumps, definitely kind of a little bit of lost to the history of American popular music was just how incredibly popular it was in the teens, 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like the beginning of it. And a lot of that has to do with the Pan Pacific Expo in San Francisco. And then the Birds of Paradise musical becoming popular, that kind of like pushed, like in 1915, it like made everybody aware of this. And that kind of happened at the same time as the propagation of the home acoustic phonograph record player.
Yeah.
And so people were able to buy records, and it's like this exotic music kind of coming in. And, so by 1920, there were Hawaiian music 78s and steel guitars and ukuleles in houses all the way across the country and all really across the world. So Interesting stuff.
Sure, sure, sure. And what were the guys playing around 1915? What were they using? And was it nylon strings or was it steel strings?
No, it would have been steel string, but it definitely would have just been a standard round hole guitar. At that point, certainly by 1920, all the major manufacturers were making Hawaiian guitars. Gibson and and Martin, they all had like dedicated, and they were, but they were just round hole guitars with raised nuts, so that you wouldn't bang the fret. And sometimes they would, you know, beef up the braces a little bit, or put extra sound ports in. But yeah, it really wasn't until a little bit later on when, you know, Weisenborn came on, and then National kind of started building guitars that were specifically for lap steel, kind of changing the design. But even like Gibson and Martin, they were making Koa guitars in the 20s and, you know, calling it an HG 45 or whatever, you know, for Martin and whatnot. So yeah.
Would they have been square neck or would they have been round neck?
No, they just round neck at that point. At a certain point, like they did that just to kind of beef up the, make the neck stronger. But sure, a lot of those guitars, you know, those historic guitars wind up getting converted to standard so people can just play them. So yeah, it just happens a lot in the vintage guitar world.
Yeah, of course, of course. Do you think, do you think part of the popularity, this is going to be a wild question, but do you, part of the popularity now, do you think SpongeBob had anything to do with that?
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. I mean, we actually did an interview in one of our issues with Jeremy Wakefield, was one of the steel players that played some of that stuff. And so we had a kid interview him in one of our issues at some, this was a few years ago, but yeah, that's absolutely. I mean, I'm playing, especially the era that I'm playing, you know, the hot, you know, the vaudeville jazz stuff. It's like that's all over the place on there, and people, oh, SpongeBob music or whatever, you know. So for sure, there's no doubt in my mind.
And do you think, are there kids involved in the Hawaiian Steel Guitar Association?
Yeah, actually, we have a scholarship program, so we're sponsoring kind of a revolving, you know, there's a bunch of parameters, but basically like middle school and high school kids in Hawaii, we're paying for lessons, and it just kind of depends from term to term who's eligible and all that kind of stuff. I think that right now we just have one student, but very recently we had up to three or four at a time, and it's just like, you know, 10 lesson blocks kind of stuff, and it can re-up, and so kind of get working with the teachers there to kind of find good candidates, and you know, eventually they age out and they become professionals or go on to other stuff, but we kind of help them get going. So that's a big part of where some of our donation dollars goes to, is to education. You know, that's another component besides the online stuff that I mentioned before.
Do you guys have like a directory of teachers in different areas?
We're building that again. Like we had one on our previous website, and like, you know, just people age out or pass away or move on and whatever. So that's definitely something that we have a list. I don't know exactly what the status is online right now, but that's going to be something we're actually looking for more people, kind of have an open call. So if anybody out there is watching, teaches Hawaiian steel guitar music, like just reach out to the club.
Yeah.
Sure.
So going back to the guitars that you got and how you got interested in this, how did that come about? How did you get interested in Hawaiian steel guitar?
So I guess my entry point was like many, you know, guys in the Midwest who aren't growing up on the islands. My entry point was, you know, I mentioned I was already a professional gigging jazz guitar player. And so I was playing in bands, and one of my projects was a Western swing band. So we're playing like Bob Wills music and Hank Williams, that kind of stuff. And so I got exposed to the steel guitar, and I just kind of fell in love with it. And I also, you know, obviously there's a lot of great reissues of actual Hawaiian discs from that era.
Yeah.
And so I was exposed to some of that from friends. And, you know, I, like, even in my guitar career, like, I always kind of wind up doing a lot of research, going back, finding out the origins of things. So, like, in my jazz guitar world, you know, it was, like, learning about Eddie Lang. And Django Reinhardt is, like, my home base. I do that kind of hot club music when I play guitar. And so I kind of did the same thing on the steel. You know, I, like, kind of started toying with the idea of playing lap steel when we had a lineup change in the Western swing band that I was in at that point. And, you know, so that was like where I bought my first guitar and stuff like that. But I started researching it and really just fell in love with the early stuff, and really got very into it. And I felt like when I first got my first really good steel and I was really digging into that stuff, it was like when I first got into jazz guitar, like I was, you know, inspired and wanting to practice all the time in a way that I hadn't in like probably 10 years, just because you get to a certain point, you're gigging all the time. It's like, you don't grow as much, I don't think. A lot of people find themselves in that same rut. And so I was kind of blessed to have my career kind of start over again,
yeah.
you know, about 15 years ago or something. Yeah, just like digging into stuff. And I was more and more interested in it. And one of the guys here in town that I was in the band with, he was already involved in the Hawaiian Steel Guitar Association. Okay. And 1 year he talked me and another guy out to going out to Fort Collins to hang out and play. And we had a great time. And it just kind of furthered my thing. So yeah.
Right on. Did you go to music school?
No.
Nah.
Self-taught.
Okay.
I have a degree in instrument repair.
Oh, right.
So my first career out of college was I worked in music stores in a repair shop, but all along I was, you know, busting my butt, learning how to play. And like my long-term goal was like be a repairman during the day, gig as much at night, you know, own my own shop,
yeah.
that kind of stuff, you know, the typical thing. So, but I quickly found myself, you know, gigging a lot. But yeah, so I never went to music school. It's hard to go to music school for early jazz and Hawaiian steel guitar. Like you
yeah.
can't really do it. You got to do what the old guys did and just learn off the records and stuff like that.
Sure,
so.
Sure. And when did you start acquiring Nationals, the guitar set behind you?
So I've been doing it for, I guess, like maybe 6 years ago. So for a long time, I was, you know, I was gigging on a Weisenborn,
okay,
playing Hawaiian music, and then in the electric steels for the Western Swing Band.
Okay.
So Fenders and Gibsons and stuff like that. But yeah, I had a Weisenborn that I was playing out basically leading up to the beginning of the pandemic or the end of that year or whatever previous to that. I went down to Grun's and traded him a Gibson ES-150, an early Charlie Christian guitar, for a Weisenborn.
Wow.
And I just played that thing to death, man. I was just like, I couldn't stop, you know, I was like so into it. This is, like I said, like when I first started really being serious about,
sure.
about the Hawaiian steel. And, but then I got into the Nationals. I mean, I just was like my home base. After that, after I made the switch to the Tricone, the square neck Tricone,
uh-huh.
But you know, being a guitar player and I, you know, really avid ukulele player, obviously on the other side, you know, I guess the folks can't see him, but I got a tenor here and a plectrum.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just, you know, getting into, but you know, I'm just in the process of releasing a new record and I'm using all six of the Nationals,
wow.
on throughout the record. So I can play them all. They're not just sitting here.
Yeah. And are they all vintage instruments or do you prefer the vintage ones to what's
yeah,
coming out?
I do prefer the vintage ones. These are all vintage. I do have a modern, Tricone with a cutaway that I actually I played that for many years. Like I think I got it in 2010 or something. Mm-hmm. But it was it's a round neck, so I played it like for jazz guitar stuff, for early jazz stuff.
Yeah.
But during the pandemic, I actually sent that back to National and had them put a baritone neck on it.
So oh, wow.
I use that on my solo records. So my solo records are like Les Paul multi-tracking.
Okay.
That type of a project where I'm layering stuff. So
what are you using for the Django stuff?
So I have a guitar in that style, a Del Arte. I okay. play that, and I also had for a while, about a year, up until real recently, I had a 1979 Jean-Pierre Favino French jazz guitar, French, you know, oval hole.
Yeah.
So yeah, for both of them.
Like the DuPont.
But you got to have, that's like a tool of the trade, you know, you can't, I feel like, you know, the Django stuff, it just takes a particular kind of gear.
Sure.
So.
And how often are you gigging?
Oh, quite a bit. You know, so before the pandemic, I was doing like 4, 5, 6 a week or something,
wow.
175 a year. I'm a little more picky now, but still like, you know, a couple of gigs a week. I'm playing tonight, playing Saturday.
Okay.
Just did 3 in a row this last weekend. So
wow.
April is my busy month so far this year. I got 15 gigs this month. So
wow, right on.
As much as I can, yeah.
Yeah. Do you have like a regular gig at places, a few places?
Yeah, I mean, I have recurring stuff, but not like a weekly or a specifically monthly thing, but
okay.
there's definitely venues that like I'm there every 6 weeks or 5 weeks, just, you know, the way the calendar works. So, but yeah, so.
Yeah, very good.
It's great.
And you have a calendar on your website?
Yes, I do.
And your website, the address is?
It's musicbychristo.com, and that's just like Christopher with the last syllable cut off, C-H-R-I-S-T-O, musicbychristo.com.
Very good. And the Hawaiian Steel Guitar Association website, what is that?
Yeah, that's hsga.org.
Okay, very good.
hsga.org, yep.
You mentioned the 78s that are behind you. Where did you collect all those? I mean, those are...
So I spent a lot of time, you know, hunting around whenever I travel. I used to... go down and play once a year with a band in Memphis. I'd go on tour with them, so hunting along the roadside and junk shops and stuff.
Yeah.
But as I got into it more and more, you know, I really started to refine my collection. And I have a huge amount of steel guitar music, but I also collect world music in general. So I have a bunch of African, Turkish, anywhere.
Oh, wow.
Anything you can imagine for world music. Those are kind of like my two main things. And so that kind of requires online purchasing and trading. And, you know, so I have, you know, friends in all over the world, UK, Canada, Spain, that I am routinely trading with and buying from and whatever. And you just, and, you know, obviously the niche Facebook interest groups and in years past the Yahoo email groups and stuff like that. You just find different ways in auctions, you know, so you just find different ways to find stuff. And
the world music that you're listening to, is it from the earlier era or is it from right now?
No, it's early. Yeah, okay. It's all 78. So that's like, that's, I feel like that's, you know, I mean, like it's definitely a passion, you know, for sure.
Yeah. On the Hawaiian Steel Guitar website, is there an area where people can trade instruments or buy and sell and stuff like that?
We're actually working on a kind of storefront. So right now, there's just kind of like club stuff. There may be one steel in there, but there will be more of that. And, you know, in years past, we definitely run classifieds in the print editions of our newsletter. And so we're trying to figure out a way, like the best way to sort of how to do that. And people, you know, obviously at events, people bring stuff for sale, but we are working on developing kind of a marketplace on the website too for that kind of stuff. So.
The event that's in Santa Cruz, when is that going to take place?
Yeah. So that is, let me just dial it up here. It's going to be Santa Cruz. We're going to be there from October 22nd to the 25th.
Okay.
And so we're going to be at the Hotel Paradox, which is right downtown. We have some other satellite events. There's actually some weekly Hawaiian events that happen there. So we'll be at the Pono Grill on Friday night. We'll have some sort of a public-facing concert on Saturday night with all of our headliners and stuff. And we don't have a specific venue for that yet, but there's actually someone from our board going to Santa Cruz this weekend to try to figure out some of that stuff. So still kind of in the early planning phases of it, but there's a little bit of information at hsga.org, and we certainly invite anybody that's interested in this stuff. It's really fun, a very welcoming community and stuff like that. So please join us in Santa Cruz. Again, the October 22nd through the 25th.
Yeah, right on. And is there a preferred tuning? Do you have a preferred tuning?
I play in A11, which is a little weird. I know it feels like it's a little out of left field, but so I mentioned C6 before. Like C6 is kind of like a standard tuning that, you know, like everybody who plays steel, like that's it's pretty normal tuning, especially for Hawaiian music.
Sure.
And so a sister tuning to that you can get to from the same set of strings is B11.
Uh-huh.
So basically I'm just playing an A11, which is, you know, down a step, because when I was learning, all the early stuff is either going to be in an open G or an open A.
Sure.
And so my A11 tuning preserves that top G triad that I was used to playing from the very beginning.
Gotcha.
But it also opens up, you know, the opportunity to play all kinds of beautiful chord melody stuff, jazz stuff, Western swing. It's kind of like a universal tuning to me, you know. Mm-hmm. In the Hawaiian world, the B11 tuning is really, in some ways, it's pigeonholed to a few very specific pieces of repertoire.
Uh-huh.
But I feel like it's a great, you know, the 11 tunings are really great because you've got, you know, straight bar minor, straight bar major, dominant chords, and you get into slides and you can get slants, you can get into all kinds of beautiful complex stuff, you know. So I really like to do like jazz arranging for lap steel in the 11 tuning. It's super fun. So,
and what would the tuning be on a 6-string guitar?
Yeah, so what I have is it's basically an A triad and a G triad. So I've got C, A on the bottom, C sharp, E, G, B, D.
Wow.
And is so that just an A triad and a G triad?
Sure. And is that bottom A, is that lower than the standard E, or is it above the standard E?
It's above the standard. It's the A on guitar.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you have to have a special set of strings to do that?
Yeah, I mean, like, if you're playing C6, you can get to the B11, but me playing an A11 on a long scale instrument, I just order separate strings.
Okay, all right. But
there's a lot of resources for that, like in the lap steel world, there's string gauge tightness charts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you know, the more you get into lap steel, the more you find out that like everybody's got their own tunings, and there's literally hundreds of them, and so yeah, it's really interesting. It's kind of like a That instrument is still evolving.
Sure, I think, sure. So, and what would a C6 tuning look like on a six-string guitar?
So C6 typically is going to for six-string is usually going to be with a low C. So you have your octave on the bottom. So okay. C, C E G A C E. So you have your third on the top.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of early C6 players will have a G above that.
Wow.
So if you play a six string, or if you play a seven or an eight string C6, then you might you put the high G on, and then on the bottom you might do a B flat, so you have like a C13.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of thing. So it just depends on the player, but I in my experience, I prefer having the fifth of the chord on the top, just because of my playing style. But a lot of C6, most six string C6 is going to have the third on the root or the E or the on the top or the E.
Yeah.
So.
Is there in the membership? Is there much crossover with slack key guitar players?
There's definitely guys who do both. We're actually going to at our event. We're hoping to have a slack key guy on our. Often, almost every year, we have somebody that comes in and plays slack key.
Okay.
So does a showcase set on that kind of stuff. So definitely, those are our two worlds that are closely linked, but not always together. You know?
Sure,
so.
Sure. And the name of your new record that's going to come out in July? What is that?
It's called Get Under the Moon.
Okay.
And that's kind of like there's an old jazz standard that's called Get Out and Get Under the Moon.
Okay.
And so I do that song. I just shorten the title a little bit, but
sure.
I took a beautiful picture in Waikiki last year. I was there. I was playing at the Waikiki Steel Guitar Week last summer in July, and I got a picture of a full moon over Diamond Head, which is on the cover. So.
Right on.
Yeah. Let's get under the moon.
Cool. Your library, the albums that you put out. How many albums do you have total?
So I have four. This will be my fourth solo record.
Okay.
But I also, I mean, I've been on. Let me. I have a record label, Hot String Swing Records, and this is our 13th release.
Right.
And I'm on all of them. Uh-huh. So this would include releases from my Django style band Caravan, and other projects I've had over the years. And I've also done some little session stuff here and there. So I think I've probably been on like 20 records or something like that over the years.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Mostly independent music. It's just, playing that early jazz, DIY,
Sure. Well, Christo, it's been wonderful speaking with you. I appreciate your time, and it's been very informative.
Yeah, cool. Thank you for having me.
Yeah,
for sure.
Of course. My pleasure. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Have Guitar Will Travel. You can catch up on all the things I'm doing at thedeadlies.com. And I'm on all the social media platforms as well. And please support Vintage Guitar and all the wonderful things they do, because they do many, many wonderful things for us guitar players. Thanks. Please subscribe. Please tell a friend. And I'll see you guys next week. Bye, guys.